Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time for Images of the Past. Today we've got Gary Enright from the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer with us. Gary, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate the invite.
We are talking about the Custer family now. Where do you want to begin with this story?
Well, it's the way that I have originally presented this material is somebody who's sitting there looking at some pictures at the time that I'm presenting it. And so to do this on audio is a little different, but I really would like to start out by talking about the family of General George Armstrong Custer. He was extremely close to all members of his family, and apparently whenever he was to receive a new assignment in the United States military, eventually he got to be in the leadership role, and then he would gather his family members around him as members of like the 7th Cavalry, for instance. And what happened, of course, was that this followed him throughout his entire career, including the years that he was in the Civil War and a hero in the Civil War. But he also had his two brothers and brother-in-law all with him at the time that he was serving in the military. So this led to a real tragedy when the Battle of the Little Bighorn took place.
Now, were they? Why would he want his family members there? Was it a personal thing because he enjoyed their company, or were they extremely competent from a military standpoint? What was his motivation?
Well, I think the motivation, from what I have read about his history, is that he was close to his family. He liked them. He wanted them around him, and I think maybe more to do with that than to do with maybe their competence, except for his brother Thomas, who was a bigger hero in the Civil War than General Custer was. His brother, Thomas Custer, actually is the only person in the history of American military to receive two Medals of Honor. Congressional Medals of Honor. Nobody else has ever done that. And so he was a very competent soldier. But I have, when I wrote this material, I actually put it in the context of what happened when the Battle of Little Bighorn took place and how the family that was surviving reacted to it.
Let's get to that in just a minute. I'm wondering if Custer was married. Did he have a wife?
Yes, he had his wife Elizabeth, or Libby, as she was known, was a hometown girl from the area where he was born and raised in Monroe, Michigan, and he actually had a very loving relationship with his wife. Oddly enough, the general was court-martialed at one time for being away without leave when he took off from his assignment in Kansas and went back to Fort Leavenworth, where his wife was stationed, or where he was actually stationed, and he took off for a week or so to be with her. And he was actually court-martialed for that.
How was that resolved?
Well, he went to a court-martial hearing and was given a slap on the wrist, basically. he was just told, don't do that.
So did she ever travel with him, Libby?
Yeah, and if we had a major conflict going on with an enemy somewhere, then you would have been put in the brig and probably dethroned. He would have lost his rank. So,
Did she ever travel with him, Libby?
She did. She wound up at every fort where he actually was assigned. When he came to Custer, South Dakota, he came here from Fort Abraham Lincoln, and Mrs. Custer, Libby, was living in at Fort Abraham Lincoln. That house, by the way, still exists for you history buffs who want to travel to the Bismarck area sometime. That fort is still there, reproduced for the most part, but the one of the buildings that is there that was the original building was the house that George and Libby lived in when they were assigned to Fort Abraham Lincoln.
And what would her role have been back in garrison then?
Well, you know, when she was assigned with him to wherever he lived or wherever he was assigned to serve, she actually wasn't a real prominent type of a person. Her role in his life came after he died. After he was killed, she spent the rest of her life justifying all of the activities of her husband, George Armstrong Custer. And she wrote books. She traveled extensively around the United States, giving speeches, lectures at colleges. She became an intellectual communicator, but she defended him and everything that he did in his military career, probably better than most people ever have had a defender speak in their behalf.
So she was defending him as a military man and the actions that he took.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And she was accepted in that role?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. She was very highly honored and lived to be quite elderly. I think she was in her late 80s when she finally passed away. But she has written two or three books that outlined her family and her husband's role in the military, not only in the Civil War, but in the Indian Wars, and then what led to the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Tell me about someone else in the family. We've talked a little bit about Thomas. We've talked about Libby. Who else was there with George?
Well, there was a younger brother. Thomas was 31 years old when the Battle of Little Bighorn took place. And so he was a relatively young man. He was 5 years younger than General Custer. General Custer was only 36 when he died. So, but then they had another brother, a third brother, whose name was Boston, like the city.
Mm-hmm.
His fellow soldiers called him Boss, in short. And he was 27 years old when the Battle of Little Bighorn took place. And he was an enlisted man, while Thomas was a captain. Boston was some lower rank, I think probably a sergeant. His job was to take care of the horses. I know it sounds kind of funny, but because they moved with so many horses for wagons and all of the cavalry, each of them had two or three horses that went in the herds that went along wherever the cavalry went. Well, Boss's job was to take care of the horses, and I would think that probably it was a pretty important assignment. And then there was another member of the family that was killed at Little Bighorn, which would now be with George Armstrong Custer, Thomas Custer, and then Boss Custer, all dying at that battle. Then a nephew of each of those was there also, and that was Henry Armstrong Reed. He was 18 years old. He was the son of Mr. and Mrs. Custer, that would then the parents, their daughter Lydia. Lydia married a man by the name of David Reed, and they had a son who joined the Army to serve with Uncle George, Armstrong Custer, and at Little Bighorn, he was 18 years old. So he was the fourth member of the family to die in that battle. And then finally, the fifth member to die in that battle was the son-in-law, or General Custer's brother-in-law, James Calhoun, who was a lieutenant. And eventually, I think by the time the Little Bighorn came along, he was a captain also. And he was one of those people who also, along with every other member of the family, came to what is now South Dakota, to the Black Hills, on the Custer Expedition of 1874. And Mr. Calhoun wrote a book about it, and it is one of the best-selling books on that whole 1874 Black Hills Expedition.
Hmm.
And oddly enough, we sell it here in the bookstore at the museum.
Mm-hmm.
But it is it's a very historical document because it gave a day-by-day, hour-by-hour account of what happened on that particular trip. Oddly enough, he did not do anything like that for the Battle of Little Bighorn, or if he did, it was destroyed probably by the Indians who attacked them.
Lost to history.
We don't think he wrote a history of that.
So let's go back to who survives. There are parents, I take it, who must have to be notified.
They were notified by the Department of the Army. The rest of the nation, of course, had known because the Bismarck Tribune and the rest of the papers all over America carried the headline story, General Custer and the 7th Cavalry were wiped out, and then they all knew that prior to the time that they received the official notice, which arrived in the form of an officer coming to their home in Monroe, Michigan, telling them that not only had their son George died, but four other members had died in the battle also.
How many people died in that battle?
260-some soldiers. Died in that battle of the American soldiers. We do not know how many Native Americans. The Native Americans have kept that a secret for many, many years. They haven't said how many of their people died.
How much do we know about the battle itself? Do we have a well-rounded account of it, or do we have more of a one-sided account of what happened there?
Well, I think a well-rounded because in later years, people like Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull were all involved in the Battle of Little Bighorn. Mm-hmm. So these people had their opportunity to tell the story, and the authors have picked it up. I would say, other than maybe for the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the Battle of Little Bighorn is probably the most well-documented historical event that ever occurred in the United States military. Mm-hmm. There are books galore on that subject.
And you've read them all?
Well, I'd like to think so. No, but I've read enough, I think, to get a good feeling for it. And every once in a while, when something jumps out, like the five members of one family, what reminded me of it was the story of President Lincoln writing to Mrs. Bixby in Boston, Massachusetts during the Civil War. Mrs. Bixby lost five sons in the Civil War, and the President of the United States thought that was significant enough to write her a letter expressing the sorrow of the nation. And then, of course, the famous Sullivan family, five sailors, all one family from Waterloo, Iowa, died on a destroyer during World War II. And they received national attention because five members died. And as I read these histories, it all of a sudden occurred to me that here was another family that had five members die, and that was the Custer family.
Gary Enright is the director of the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. Gary, the images and the text that you put together for the website are really engaging, so thank you for that, and thank you for sharing this story with us today as well.
Thank you, Laurie. I appreciate the opportunity.
You can see South Dakota in photos and film online. Just head over to sdpb.org. Images of the Past, we do those segments every Monday. That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. I'd like to thank all of our guests, Department of Corrections for South Dakota Secretary Denny Kamink, Teresa Berndt, Jasmine Rockwell, they were with the State Library and Education in Pierre, and Gary Enright with the 1881 Courthouse Museum in Custer. Thanks as well to SDPB's Chris Loffrey and Owen DeYoung.